ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
I'm so happy to be here with all of you tonight. Coming into this temple is always a new life's experience, and seeing all of you here is the best of the best. Thank you for coming, and thanks to everyone who's joined us online. May I have a Bhagavad Gita? I know if we can distribute 50 or 100,000 Gitas a year, you should probably find one here. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, starting on the 27th verse, 27th and 28th verses, Krishna talks about the difference between acting in knowledge and acting in ignorance. As it turns out, it makes a big difference. So, in 327, Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah Ankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. And the translation is, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. And let's listen to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Two persons, one Krishna conscious and the Krishna consciousness, and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nascence. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So there's a few things that Prabhupada mentions that the person in ignorance does not know. One is that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature. This is an important point. If we mistake the body to be the self, which is characteristic of those in the modes of passion and ignorance, they think, I am this body. And there's nothing beyond this, my family and my nation and so forth. Bodily identification is the same as animistic consciousness. Yasya mabudhi kuna petri dhatu ke swadhi kalatradishu bhoma idyati yatirta buddhi salilena karichich janeshu abhigeshu sa eva gokara. This is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna says that a person who identifies him or herself with the material body, thinking that this body, which is mechanistic, and if you really look at it, it's a bag of bile, mucus, and air, if you want to put it like that. Yasyatma buddhi kuna petra dakrute, which Krishna does. And that it's such a person then considers the land that he or she was born in to be worshipable, and This, he says, Eva Gokara, a person like this is in animalistic consciousness, no better than an ass or a cow. Yes.
This question was raised in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, that although the cow is considered to be worshipable, what is the reason that she's listed over here? Is it just animalistic consciousness?
It's an animal.
Just an animal, like that.
Yeah, worshipable animal, but they don't have evolved consciousness, even though they're sacred animals. So, and very particularly the cow, because Prabhupada says that if a calf dies, then if they put the calf in front of the cow, even when it's dead, then the cow will give milk and lick the body of the calf, thinking that it's alive. And so, in a similar way, a person thinking this body is alive, which it's not, and then invests him or herself in a rendering service to the body and the senses, it's similar. So the first thing is that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature. That's something they do not know. And the second is that the material nature is controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the third is that he should engage his service in senses in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the three things that Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that they do not know. First is that the body is mechanistic and that they're different from the body. The second is that the material nature is controlled by someone and that someone is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the third is that that person should engage his senses in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he also mentioned the characteristic of a person who's in ignorance, that he takes credit for whatever he does. So now let's look at the person in knowledge. That's the next verse, 28. They're one next to the other. Krishna juxtaposes these verses to give us the contrast. Tattvavittu Mahabhaho Gunakarma Vipagayo Gunagineshu Vartanta Itimatva Nasajjate. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Armed, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Prabhupada's purport, the knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge, and he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord. Consequently, he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of God, it is called Tattvavit. Called what? For he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. So, now we have the contrast. And here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the things that a tattvavit, a knower of the truth, knows. First is that the awkwardness of material nature. Material nature is awkward for a reason, and that is that we are non-material and incompatible with the material nature. And The word awkward is spelled rather awkwardly also. It's got two W's in it. And if you don't know how to spell it, you'll have to look it up, because it's it has A-W-K, then another W-A-R-D, awkward. Just to say it is awkward. And this is can be a relief to those who are tat-vavit, who are in knowledge of the Absolute, and that is that the material world is awkward. If I think that it's not, or it's not supposed to be, or it's just me that doesn't fit in here, then I might be very disappointed. But actually, it's awkward for every spirit soul in this world, because we don't really belong here. What does the word awkward mean, Shraddha? She's already. She saw it coming.
So awkward is an adjective which means causing difficulty, hard to do or deal with. Number two,
causing difficulty, hard to do or deal with.
For example, some
any of these
questions.
Fit. Anything that happened to you today? Okay.
Causing or feeling embarrassment or inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
Not smooth or graceful.
Check.
Ungainly. And the origin is amazing. It says late Middle English, in the sense, the wrong way around.
The wrong way around.
From awk, which means backward or perverse and clumsy.
Okay, this is also the description in the Bhagavatam in the verse Bhayam Dvitiya Binibesha Tasya Ishad Api Tasya Viparyosmiti. Viparyosmiti means that one's intelligence gets turned around. It goes in the opposite direction. And therefore, I become full of fear as I'm interacting with Krishna's external energy. And I identify with it. And therefore, my life becomes awkward or difficult. So the tattvavit knows this very well, that the material nature is awkward. The second thing here she knows is he's a part and parcel of Krishna. This is mentioned in the Sri Brahma Samhita, that we have an eternal kinship with the Lord. We're eternally related with Him. It's not that at some point we come into our relationship with Him, but we always have a relationship. We always have had a relationship with Him. We always will. But we've been illusioned and disconnected from that. Third is, he knows, he's not part of the material creation. Asanga kyayam purusha, the Vedas say, in giving us great relief, you have nothing to do with this material nature at all. And you don't belong here. Fourth is that somehow or other he's been trapped by the material condition. And this is a good summary of how we fall into the material nature. It's argued ad infinitum in various places. But here it's summed up somehow or other. We fall into the material nature. But a person who's in knowledge knows this, that somehow or other I've been conditioned by the material modes. And fifth, he knows that his life is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And sixth, the material reactions are the mercy of God. And seventh, he knows a lot. He knows a lot more than the other guy, doesn't know stuff. Number seven, that he has an eternal relationship with Krishna. He has an eternal relationship with Krishna. This is very important. So I'll read the seven again. He knows the awkwardness of material nature, that he's part and parcel of Krishna, that he is not part of the material creation, that somehow or other he's been trapped by the material condition, that his life is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that material reactions are the mercy of God, and then he has an eternal relationship with Krishna. Everyone in this room who knows all seven of those, raise your hand. Everyone's hand should go up. You don't know this. Raise your hand. Even if you didn't know what I asked you, raise your hand. Okay. Okay, yes, you know all seven of these. You're tattvavits. You're knowers of the truth. So the difference is profound. And the question may be asked, that's what I'm going to ask it. How is it that activity done in full knowledge is non-reactive? And this is one of the results of having knowledge, and Prabhupada mentions it in his purport, and that is that the person in ignorance and the person in knowledge may be doing the same things, but the result is different. And isn't that profound? That because of a person's consciousness, as they're performing the activity, one person gets one result, another person gets a different result. Please give me a verse from the Shisha Upanishad that says something like that. It starts with Anyad, Evahur, Sambhavad. You know the verse, Anyad Evahur Sambhavad, Anyad Ahur Asambhavad, Iti Shushumadhiranam, Yenas Tadvich Chakshire. Everyone should memorize Shisha Upanishad. If you haven't yet, by next weekend, please. Anyadevur sambhavad, anyadahur asambhavat means that there's a difference between worshipping that which is supreme and that which is not supreme. This is an axiomatic truth, and it's important to us because as living beings, we're concerned with consequences, aren't we? Yes. Say yes.
Yes.
Do you ever look at your financial holdings? Do you care when the market goes up and down? Yeah, people look at it a lot more when it goes up than when it goes down. They don't want to look. A study was shown. So we care about consequences, and when we invest our minds, our intelligence, our propensity to worship something or someone in the supreme, then we get one result, and another result, a different result, comes out when you worship that which is not supreme. So these two verses explain what the difference is when you understand who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is and what your relationship with Him is. When you perform activities, then it's non-reactive. And there's a lot of proof for that in the Vedas, in the Shastra. The ultimate reason I'll start with is the mercy of Krishna. Of course, everything's dependent on Krishna. But the reason that we're free from reactions is Krishna's mercy. So, in the purport to Tattvavittu Mahabahu, Guna Karma Vibhagayo, Guna Guneshu Vartanta Iti Matva Nasajjite, where Krishna's talking about the Tattvavit, he says that a person, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of God, it is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. So this is very important. The relationship. Because when we act in relationship with Krishna, Krishna intervenes in our lives. And for the devotees, it appears that he gives special consideration, although if you read the seventh canto carefully, you'll see that Shukadeva Goswami goes to great lengths to point out that the Lord is impartial, and that as we come into knowledge because of divine intervention, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, how important that is, intervention, that we realize our intimate relationship with Krishna, that we're actually part of Him, and that we have a loving relationship with Him. Krishna mentions this in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya eva janti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham. He says, I'm equal to everybody. But one who worships me, samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya, doesn't envy anybody, eva janti tumam bhaktya, if somebody worships him, maite teshu chapyaham, I'm in him, he's also in me. And so the person who comes to knowledge then begins to realize his relationship with Krishna. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that when somebody realizes that, oh, I have a relationship with Krishna, and then sincerely tries for it, that Krishna helps such a person. It says that in very specifically in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th verse and the 11th verse. He says, Tesham satata yuktanam pachatam priti purvakam dadami bhuti yogam tam yenamam upayantite. So in this verse he says, translation, that to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So as one comes into knowledge of Krishna, then Krishna is there. In the next verse he says, Tesham ivanukam partam aham agyanajam tamaha nashayam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena bhashvata. And here he says that he's within the heart of the devotee. And as the devotee approaches him in this mood of devotional service and surrender, then he illuminates, he helps the devotee by illuminating his heart and showing the way how to come towards him. So this is a great advantage for the devotees because Krishna is helping there from within the heart. And also, the Shastra says how Krishna gives a special consideration to those who are devotees. One of the prominent verses that the Acharyas quote regularly is from the 11th canto, 5th chapter, 42nd verse. Svapada mulam vajata priyasya taktanya bhavasa hare priyeshaha vikarma yat shot patitam katam chit dhunoti sarvam hridisani vishta. That is 11.5.42. So this verse says that if somebody takes to the process of devotional service, but then has a slip-up, which means vikarma yachcho patitam katanchid. Just look at the Sanskrit transliteration first. So this supada mulam bhajata priyasya. Priyasya means that a person who's engaged in worshiping Krishna is very dear to him. And Chaktanya bhavasya. So the mood of the devotee is, the bhava, is chaktanya, that I'm giving up everything for Krishna. Hari prayeshaha, I'm giving up for Hari. And now, vikama yach chot patitam katam chit, if somehow or other, for some reason, there's some vikarma while a person's performing devotional service. Vikarma means did something he wasn't supposed to do. Dhunoti sarvam hridi shandi vishta. This means that the Lord is there within the heart and rectifies the devotee from within. And therefore, it's not necessary for a devotee to perform prayaschitta as it is when one's doing karma. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, when you say that the Lord takes away, He just wipes it off, even if there's a mistake, you're talking about a pure devotee, right?
No.
Because then we look at the fact that, you know, we have to remember we're doing Vaishnava Prad.
What?
Most of the time,
that
you do Vaishnava Prad. The biggest Aprad any devotee can do is a Vaishnava Prad.
Well, don't do Vaishnava Prad.
Well, like Krishna says, yeah, I'll wipe it out, don't worry. So.
Well, there's two things that you have to suffer for. One is Vaishnava Aparad, and the other is sinning on the strength of chanting. There are other offenses which you can rectify by continuing to chant. As it says in the Vaishnava Tantra, that Nama Aparada Yuktanam Naman Yeva Harantyagam Avishrani Pariyuktani Nam Yevarta Karanicha. That if you're making aparadhas in chanting, then you should chant constantly. But the Acharyas say be careful of Vaishnava Aparada because that you actually have to suffer for. There's no rectification by continuing to chant. And also don't sin on the strength of chanting. Now, that's a big topic because one may say, one may, might ask the question, here we talked about somebody who did some V-karma. And so that question is answered in the Shri Pram Bhavati Dharmatma Shashvas Chantim Nagachati Kantiya Pratijanihi Nami Bhakti Pranashati. You know the purport, right?
No.
Okay, show the purport. We'll read it because it's important. Shripam Bhavati Dharmatma Sashas Chantim Nagashati Kantiya. This is a famous verse where Krishna's telling Arjuna, declare boldly, my devotee will never be vanquished. And he says very quickly, Shripam Bhavati Dharmatma, very quickly he becomes righteous, attains lasting peace. Now listen to this purport. You'll never be the same after you hear this. Purport, this should not be misunderstood. In the seventh chapter, the Lord says that one who is engaged in mischievous, it's not mischievous, there is no such thing, mischievous activities cannot become a devotee of the Lord. One who is not a devotee of the Lord has no good qualifications whatsoever. The question remains then, how can a person engage in abominable activities, either by accident or by intention, be a pure devotee? This question may be justly raised. The miscreants, as stated in the seventh chapter, who never come to the devotional service of the Lord have no good qualifications. As is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, generally a devotee who is engaged in the nine kinds of devotional activities is engaged in the process of cleansing all material contamination from the heart. He puts the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, and all sinful contaminations are naturally washed away. Continuous thinking of the Supreme Lord makes him pure by nature. According to the Vedas, there is a certain regulation that if one falls down from his exalted position, he has to undergo certain ritualistic processes to purify himself. But here there is no such condition. Because the purifying process is already there in the heart of the devotee due to his remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be continued without stoppage. This will protect the devotee from all accidental fall downs. He will thus remain perpetually free from all material contaminations. Now, what is accidental and what is on purpose? Prabhupada answered that. He said if they come back, it was accidental. When they come back, that he didn't consider. But we see people, you know, they go away. This Narada mentions this in his teachings to Srila Vyasadeva. Navajano jato katanshanam vrijan mukunda sevan yavat angrisam shitim. What's the next line? In this verse, Navajano jato katanshana vrijan mukunda sevan yavar angasam shritim. He says that a person may fall down from devotional service, but he can't forget the lotus feet of the Lord. Interestingly, in that purport, Srila Vishuddha Chakravarti Thakur says that the devotee is haunted by rasa. He may try to go away and experience the material world again, but it's too late. He already tasted something superior. So he'll remember it again and again. Verse? Mukunda sevan yavaranga samsritin yata mukundang rupaguhanam puna vihata nichenna rasagrahojana rasagrahojana. You want to see it?
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes.
When anybody asks you if you want to see a Bhagavatam verse, you just go, yes. Even if it's in the middle of the night, they wake you up 1 o'clock, you want to see a Bhagavatam verse? Just say yes. That's how you go back to Godhead. 1519. There it is. That's not it. Okay. I'll say, please repeat. Navajano jatu katanchana virgin. Mukunda sevan yavadanga sangsritim. Smaran mukundang rupaguhanam punar.
Smaran mukundang rupaguhanam punar.
Vi vihatum ichchennarasakrohojana. And the translation is, my dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruit of workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. He'll come back. So, in the verse we were looking at, in the 11th canto, Supadam Rulam Bhachata Priyasya, the Acharyas make several points. First is that the Lord personally protects a surrendered soul from the reactions of accidental fall down. No prayaschitta required. The second is, even powerful demigods like Yamaraj cannot touch a devotee who has been claimed by the Supreme Lord. Example is Jamil. That's the whole idea of the sixth canto, is following the fifth canto, because the fifth canto tells about the hellish conditions that people who are dedicated to material life have to suffer eventually. And Shukadeva Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj, being a compassionate Vaishnava, says, what can be done? How can they be helped? And that's when Shukadeva Goswami becomes enlivened. He tells the story of Ajamil, which he heard from a sage. And that it describes Poshanam, how the Lord is protects his devotees. Especially, he protects through his holy name. And anyone who chants the holy name like Ajamil was protected from sinful activities. One may say, how come he went on sinning even after he chanted Narayan? But the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is only a semblance of sinful activity. It was like a snake with no fangs. It was biting with no effect because the holy name is so powerful. It wiped out any kind of reactions. So, also, the Acharyas say, in regard to the verse, the devotees of the Lord are the most dear to the Lord, and he protects them as a father would protect his child, even if the child deviates. That's important to remember. And finally, that the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord on his devotees is his supreme opulence. That's brought out in the purport also. That's his supreme opulence, is his causeless mercy to his devotees. So it's good to be a devotee, isn't it? This is to Supada Mulam Bhajata Priyasya Tyaktanya Bhavasya Hari Priyeshaha. That verse, important verse to remember. So, ultimately everything's personal. That we have a personal relationship with Krishna. So it's not a mechanical thing, but we have an actual relationship with him. And when he sees our attitude towards him, he reciprocates. Where does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita that he reciprocates with everybody? Ye tamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmana vartante manushya partasarvasha. So this is heartwarming, at the very least, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the best friend of all living entities, and every one of us have a relationship with him. And he says, as in whatever way you would like to approach me, that way I'll reciprocate. This is a very sweet relationship that everybody has. So, even at first, when someone takes to the process of devotional service, with just a little bit of knowledge that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One time, Pushkar was telling me, either he or someone else, I can't remember if it was him or he was telling a story about another book distributor was in a parking lot back in the 70s. They were selling Back to Godhead magazines. And some skeptical man came by. He said, let me see what you're selling. He started going through the magazine. He said, well, what's it about? He said, it's about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the guy said, this stuff's so weird, it's got to be true. So, in the beginning, the devotees come in contact with spiritual knowledge, And they start to have a sense that this is probably true. And if they're fortunate, they come in contact with the pure devotees who are engaged in the process of devotional service, and they take it up. So if someone has a little bit of faith, it goes a long way. And this comes up in the third chapter, 31st verse of the Bhagavad Gita. This verse, everyone knows, Ye me matam idam nityam anutishtanti manava. Krishna is saying that that those who execute their duties according to my injunctions, so this means faith. You hear Krishna say something and you say, okay, I'm going to do that. And who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruit of actions. So this is called knowledge. When you get the perfect source of knowledge and then you follow it. This is knowledge in action. And this is the result, that the person becomes free from the bondage of fruit of action. And here's how powerful it is. A little bit of faith. In the Purport, Prabhupada writes, the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom, and therefore is eternally true without exception. How do you like that? Makes your life better, right? Best. As the Vedas are eternal, so this truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruit of action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge injunctions, the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So, this fortunate knowledge and faith comes into the heart of the devotee by intervention. We need intervention. Because, Lord Chaitanya says, it's not swata or automatic that a living entity comes out of the control of the material nature. We don't automatically break free from the conditioning of the modes of material nature. It's very powerful, the conditioning of material nature. Where does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita how powerful it is? Daivahesha gunamayi mama maya dhratyaya Mameveye prapadyante mayame tam tarantite. He says this divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome. But those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. So it's very difficult. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Maya mugda jivena nahi swata Krishna gyan, jivere kripaya koila Krishna Veda Puran. There's all kinds of help that's offered. Here he mentions Srila Vyasadeva, who's making the Vedas available, the Srimad Bhagavatam very specifically, so that the living entities can read it and get outside knowledge, so that their contaminated intelligence, they can become freed from the rule of their contaminated intelligence and become liberated. And one who accepts the instruction of Krishna, ye me matam idam nityam, anutishtanti mana, without envy, why should somebody else know everything and be in control? Well, Krishna is. That's his position. If one is simple and accepts that faithfully and follows Krishna's injunctions, then that person becomes freed from the influence of the contaminated intelligence and is able then to engage in devotional service. So that's an example that, let's say, a neophyte devotee gets in the car and suddenly his contaminated intelligence says, hey, go to the bar. What do you call it, a pub? Pub or a bar? So you go to the pub, go to the bar, and so all of a sudden, you know, he's in the car and he's driving towards the pub. What do you like, pub or bar better? Neither. Good, that's the right answer. See, it was a trick question. Very good. So then he may be even, you know, chanting shlokas on the way there, but the, you know, let's say he has a driver. He gets a driver. Driver, take me to the pub. So then driving down the road, and all of you are even shocked just to hear this, that he's doing that. But, you know, he's thinking, it's just a whim. In the intelligence, you know, something came up, and he's like, go there. So he's going there, even though he's chanting or something like that, but still the progress is being made towards that destination. So they come up to an intersection, and there's a devotee there. He looks in the window and says, hey, Krishnadas, where are you going? And Krishnadas looks out and he goes, I'm going to the temple. Now what just happened, there was intervention. It came from the outside. Is a contaminated intelligence told them, you know, go to the bar. And for some reason or another, you just followed it, because living entities are tiny and they get influenced by the material energy until they become extremely strong and they've transferred over to the other side, that is, past anartha nivritti, into ruchi. And they're developing a positive, like rolling, pushing a hill, a big stone until you get to the top of the hill. Once you get past anartha nivritti and the ruchi starts to come, then the stone starts running down, going down the other side. You become inclined towards Krishna, not towards Maya. But until that point, there's danger. Of course, there's always danger in the material world. At any point, someone has to be careful, vigilant. So in this example, the person there is following his contaminated intelligence. Even though he's a devotee, he may even be chanting shlokas or japa on the way. But then the outside influence comes. And suddenly, his intelligence is brought back. You go, oh, whoops. Oh, yeah, turn around, you know, take a right here, not a left, and let's go that way and go to the temple. So this kind of outside influence, good outside influence that comes from the devotees and from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, allows us to come to this point of tattvavit, of knowledge. And once we have that, then the way that we move in the world, the way we work is considered, because our activities now, our intention now is towards serving Krishna, even while living in this material body. The Rupa Goswami says such a person is a liberated soul because he's following the instruction of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So the verse Tattvavit tu Mahabaho Gunakarma Vibhagayo Guna Guneshu Vartanta Iti Matva Nasajite tells us that the position of a person who has come to this knowledge that I'm not the body, I'm not part of this material nature at all, I have nothing to do with the material world. Krishna's in control, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I have a relationship with him. And the other person's being described, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha, Ahankara, the person thinks I'm doing everything. Although it's being carried out by the material nature, he's being controlled by the material nature. So this is the difference between the contaminated material consciousness and the devotee. And one comes to this level of knowledge through which one is able, by which one is able to overcome the influence of material nature by the good graces of the devotees and Krishna. Especially the devotees, because generally Krishna doesn't get involved. He has his agents get involved, or he encourages them to do so. He says in the Gita that somebody who teaches this knowledge to other people is the most dear to me. Because Krishna, we already mentioned, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, he tries not to interfere in the independence of the living entity. And now we'll take a few reflections. Anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind? Yes, please. Yes.
So, two questions, Maharaj. One is that we talk about mercy of Krishna, and we talk a lot about the mercy of Krishna in so many Bhagavatam and so many scriptures. So, I was just wondering why Parashar Muni did not list that as one of the opulences of Krishna, or is it kind of buried in the, underneath one of them, like renunciation or something?
I don't have a specific answer for that. Those are general categories, but I've not read any specific commentary about why that mercy isn't mentioned there. But when we come to Krishna, when the closer we get to Krishna, the more we see his compassionate, merciful side, especially in the Bhagavatam. Kamba daya alum sharanam brajema. This is a question that Uddhava asks. He said, who would take shelter of anybody else? Because he's mentioning him in relationship to Baki. Aho Baki yamstana kala kutam jikam saya payad apyasad vi. He says, Aho Baki yam. Uddhava's saying, oh, how wonderful that Krishna killed Bhutana. Baki. She's the sister of Bakasura. So her name is Baki. So, Aho Baki Yam Stana Kala Kutam Jikam Saya Payad Apyasadvi. Even though she was a fake nurse and she came in with bad intentions and she tried to kill Krishna, Krishna gave her a position of mother. So, in the purport, in the last line of the purport, if you go down to that, Prabhupada writes, the Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? And in the material world, we have more of a sense of justice, the law of karma. We deal with how Mahavishnu oversees the world, and there's a kind of mercy within karma because it helps to refine us. It's a kind of what we call a cosmic sensitivity training. And then, of course, the mercy is there. And we have a sense through following processes mentioned in the Vedas, like Varnashrama, that we're pleasing the Lord somehow or other. But it's very indirect. Just like if you follow all the traffic laws on the way home tonight, which I hope you do, make a full stop at red lights, please. Then Donald Trump will be pleased with you, indirectly, because he's ostensibly, the head of the government, and you follow the laws that were set out somehow or other. So there's this indirect sense of mercy in the material world, but when you start to come into the Bhagavatam and you see Krishna and Vraj, then you see more how directly merciful he is. And everybody's asking about it. Even Brahma in his prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, Krishna, after you gave so much mercy to Baki, to Putana, do you have anything left for the residents of Vrindavan? I mean, you gave so much to this dastardly person who was a child killer and tried to kill you, but you gave him complete mercy. You have anything left for everybody else? And the big answer is yes, more and more and more and more. So you see Krishna in his aspect of supremely compassionate and merciful, especially in the form of Krishna. And when Parashara is mentioning these general opulence, categories of opulences, talking about God, and Krishna's not God, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes.
The same thing that you just mentioned, Prabhu, I just wanted to say how Prabhupada says in the 331 purport that even if we understand Krishna's instructions, but even if unable to follow his orders, but still, because if you are not inimical, then you get the benefit. So I was just thinking about my a corporation, like where you have to follow all the rules and work so hard, but you get the least reward. But here you understand, but you try your best, even if you have the least activity that you do, but still Krishna gives the highest award because of our intention.
It's really good to remember, isn't it? And this comes out also again very prominently in the pastime of Bali Maharaj. His buddy was a demon, a family of demons, and he was performing a big yajna, gloating over stealing the whole universe from Indra. I mean, this conflict is always going on, and Bali came out on top. And so there they are, enjoying the whole thing. And then Vamadeva comes in. Actually, he's considered one of Krishna's most beautiful incarnations. People couldn't take their eyes off him. This is mentioned in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Vamadeva, one of the most beautiful. He's a little brahmachari, you know, effulgent, wearing a little deer skin. He's a little small. He's like, wow. You know, everyone's kind of like, aw. Yeah. So, you know, he comes in and Bali sees him and he just falls for him completely. He's like, wow, in his heart. But externally, he sees the emperor, so he can't do anything right then. Because everyone's watching him. All the demons are around there, like, let's do the yajna. And Bali's thinking, like, I'm going to surrender. And Vamana knows that. So this is mentioned later in the pastime when Vamana is so grateful to Bali Maharaj, he becomes his doorkeeper. And he sends him to a place in the lower planetary system that's more opulent than Indra's abode. And so on. And everyone's wondering, why did that happen? It was what was in Bali's heart that counted. He wanted to surrender right there. So Krishna understands the intention of the devotee. As the person struggling along in devotional service, but their full intention is, I'm going to surrender. It's interesting, isn't it? What is an intention anyway? Can you put one in a laboratory and look at it? You look at it, what do you got in there? A little intention. I was thinking about this the other day. It's the most consequential of any other thing, emotion that we have, or any other, whatever it is. What is an intention anyway? It's our free will. And for instance, I'll just give you an example. If someone comes up to you and says some nice words, but you find out later that their intention really was to rip you off or something, how do you feel? It doesn't matter what they said. You know, they're like, oh, they really didn't care. You know, the phone stayed on. They thought they were off, and they say, ha, 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 got them. You know, and they go, oh, the intention was wrong. So, you know, you feel you not just cheated, but devastated. And if somebody does everything wrong, but their intention was right, you go like, okay, no problem. We get you. You know, you're okay. Somebody can be very awkwardly give you something, give you the wrong thing, broken thing, whatever it is, but their intention was right. This is an example of a little child goes out and picks a flower on Mother's Day and brings it to the mother. It's from the mother's garden. And it's like, but the intention was there, you know. Then it becomes overwhelmingly powerful. And so Krishna notices that more than anything. What is the intention in the heart of the devotee? And if you want to be effulgent, if you want to be happy, if you want the world to be beautiful, then change your intention in your heart. And if you change your heart, the quality of your heart, have a surrendered heart, a heart surrendered to Krishna, decide once and for all that I surrender to Krishna in your heart, then everything else around you will change, and the tenor of your voice, the quality of your speech, everything will become effective. Otherwise, wrong intention, you're saying the same words, and they won't have the effect. What are the things? I thought it's your hand going. Okay, yes.
Prabhu, I was just thinking that, you know, since the beginning we were talking about how certain conditionings that we have can be gone with chanting. But Vaishnava Aparadh, we were discussing before, that is something the most scariest thing. So what exactly does a Vaishnava Aparadh comprise? I have this question because I was just thinking that while we render our service, we might have a difference of opinion in a couple things, which, as you just mentioned, the intention may not be to put somebody down, but you might have the service on your head and make sure that things have to be changed in a few ways. So in that process, you might affect somebody. You might so-called offend somebody. Is that a Vaishnava Aparadh, or should we let the service, thing become secondary and make sure that you are just be a pleaser every time?
the intention is very important. Well, just as a general point, we should be very careful. That's why devotees go out of their way. I noticed, you know, devotees are talking in meetings, this one and that one, even if they're talking about somebody who, you know, sort of like going against the grain, and, you know, what are we going to do about this? It's causing problems, maybe even to a lot of devotees. They'll still say Prabhu, such and such Prabhu. Or, you know, they'll use the honorific because they're being careful. You know, this is the level of care that devotees take when they talk about other Vaishnavas. So that's important. On the other side, there is sort of a threshold, which is that you're envious or there's some malice involved in that. Incidental things, we have to be careful about also. That's why there's etiquette. And, you know, if you bump into a Vaishnava, what do? You go back and you're like, sorry, you know. And if you accidentally offend a Vaishnava, you know, you go back and make sure everything's okay. So we're always careful on that level. So you know, if you come into an area, a room, a website, something like that, where people just, they took off all the governors and they're just like going for it, criticizing devotees. It's like it doesn't matter anymore because of this, and that. You can list all kinds of things. Run. Be careful for your spiritual life, because there's a way to deal with things and there's a way to kill your spiritual life, which is not being careful and saying it doesn't matter anymore. It always matters. You have to be careful of Vaishnava Aparadha. Krishna likes devotees more than anything, and it's not for us to say that they're not devotees. Don't make that presumption. So there's a few practical things. Oh yes, from the internet, please. Who's on the internet tonight?
We know for sure that we have Vaikunth Nayak Prabhu.
Oh, that's good.
My key takeaways: number one, haunted by rasa. Vishnu Chakravarti's statement is deeply reassuring that once a person has got introduced to Krishna consciousness, even if he goes off, the taste will linger and the person will come back. Number two, divine intervention. How Krishna, either through directly or through his devotees, steps in to adjust the wayward behavior of neophyte devotee.
Mm. Was that Vaikuntha Nayaka?
Yes.
Very nice. He always pulls out essential points. Thank you, Vaikuntha Nayaka. So, practical steps. We heard about how people who are in ignorance take credit for everything. And so, in a practical way, devotees can and do, you'll notice, they don't take credit for what they do. They always give the credit to Krishna. And they also don't take credit for what they haven't done either. Be careful about that. Preetu Maharaj mentions this. Well, the citizens were glorifying Preetu Maharaj, saying how great he is. He said, I just got here. How do you know? And he said, this is not glorification, actually, because you haven't seen me do anything yet. So be careful of what you take credit for. If you haven't done anything, so don't take credit for what you do or for what you haven't done, and let Krishna decide whom to give the credit to. This is the best thing. When we're doing our work, because I'm talking about the verse Ahankara Vimudatma, this is the symptomatic of a person in ignorance that I think I'm the doer. So a devotee doesn't take credit. This is one of the prominent aspects of being the doer, is that I take the credit. I did that. That's me. So the devotee is careful to just leave it to Krishna, take the credit. Krishna knows how to sort it all out properly and give credit where credit is due. He goes out of his way to do that for his devotees. And not that the devotees are looking for that or waiting for Krishna to give it back, but let Krishna do everything on that level. And of course, the statement that it's amazing how much you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit. It comes back to an English author. Many people, U.S. presidents and things like that, have said it before, but this is a mode of operation of that if you're not concerned with holding things back because you need to get the credit, then there's a lot that you can do. And that's easy for devotees because devotees understand that Krishna is the ultimate doer. He's making it happen. And about intervention, Prabhupada writes, actually he's in a conversation, he mentions that everything, all resources are here in the world, but you can't touch them unless they are made available to you. And he says that you can't get them without God's intervention. So consider the fact that you have a certain level of education, you have a certain lifestyle. Prahlad Maharaj mentions in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev that these things are all Krishna's mercy and his arrangement. Some people have more, some people have less. These are all because we all have a certain capacity. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, right after he took sannyas, he went out with his followers and he asked them, did you bring anything with you? And they said, no, we didn't bring anything. You didn't tell us to bring anything. He said, very good. Because I want you to see that the Lord has filled up the universe with food and money. But people can only get what is allotted to them by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada says in this conversation that everything comes by the intervention of the Lord. And then he says the way in which that intervention becomes possible is through yajna. So yajna is the key to knowledge and opening ourselves up for everything that's beneficial for us is by performing yajna. That's the answer. And so those who are in knowledge, they perform all their work as yajna. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yat karoshi arashnashi, it's juhoshi didasiyat, yat tapasyasi kauntiya, tat kurushra marapanam. He gives us as a preliminary instruction that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away should be done as an offering unto me. And so that way, everything that we do should be in yajna, in service to Krishna. This way, we open ourselves for the intervention of the Lord in our lives through yajna. And then, as far as intervention goes, Prabhupada warns that the material nature will intervene in your life if you're not careful. So the other aspect of being a tattvavit is to be vigilant that the material nature doesn't intervene. Because if you leave an opening, and I heard this recently, there was a spate of violent crimes on the subway, not the subway, but the BART. And I heard a policeman talking about it, and he is a chief of police, so he's very educated in criminology. And he was saying that these are, we as citizens, one has to, there's not enough policemen to protect every single person. So one has to be careful of crimes of opportunity. The citizens have to protect themselves because in one way, if you leave yourself open for crimes to occur, then partly you're responsible because you made it so available. So you have to protect yourself. So he said, like, so many people steal cell phones now. As you're just standing there on the platform with lots of people around you holding like that, someone will come by and grab it and jump on the train. I don't know how they do it, but something like that. So he said, be careful, watch out. So in the same way, the material nature will intervene in our lives if we leave openings. These are opportunities that we leave open. You leave the door a little open, and then the material nature will come in and become recaptured. So you have to be careful. And finally, in the practical sense, Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Instruction about practice doing things right. And that is that called tat-tat karma pravartana. And he says there's two sides to that. One side is the yam and the other is a niyam. So there's do's and don'ts. So you have to be very careful, he said, about following the four regulative principles. And then on the other side, he said, be very careful and meticulous about chanting 16 rounds, doing your daily chanting very carefully. And from that, I'll read you the section. As already explained, one should not be idle, but should be very enthusiastic about executing the regulative principles, tat-tat karma pravartana. Neglect of the regulative principles will destroy devotional service. In this Krishna consciousness movement, there are four basic regulative principles forbidding illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. A devotee must be very enthusiastic about following these principles. If he becomes slack in following any of them, his progress will certainly be checked. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends tat-tat karma pravartana. Everyone say. One must strictly follow the regulative principles of Vaidhi Bhakti. In addition to these four prohibitions, yam, there are positive regulative principles, niyam, such as the daily chanting of 16 rounds on japa mala beads. These regulative activities must be faithfully performed with enthusiasm. This is called tat-tat karma pravartana, or varied engagement in devotional service. So one way to do that is to make sure that you line everything up ahead of time, because the mind is likes to do things randomly when it's not trained to be regulated. And I've found that if the night before I put out in order, in fact I started using post-it notes, this really helps, on each item that I'm going to attend to in the tat-tat karma pravartana, I put a post-it on it with a number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they're all lined up with a post-it on it. So when I wake up, as I've said many times before, I'm not the same person as when I went to sleep. And I'm often startled. It's like, wow, who set this up? This is really a good idea. If you put those kinds of things, when you have the wherewithal to do so, in place, then at other times, when the material nature has a little more influence, then you'll have this a track already ready to go. And then your mind will be much more ready to follow it and just say, okay, I'll do it. So put yourself in an advantageous position so that you can take advantage of the tat-tat karma pravartana in your life. Line them up, put them in front of you, make sure that you can see them and reach them and move forward. And now we'll take a few more reflections. Yes.
In the Nectar of Devotion, when we read the definition of pure devotional service, we say Anyabhilashita Shunya Jnana Karmadhyaya Navritam. So the Jnana there is impersonal knowledge. Is that correct, Maharaj?
Yes.
And when, like how in the purport also when Krishna is talking about knowledge, so is this knowledge different from that knowledge?
Yes. Yes, it is. So this, what we're talking about is knowledge and relationship with Krishna, knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, especially sambandha jnana, which means to understand who we are in relationship to Krishna and how to use everything that we have for Krishna, which is called yajna.
So is it correct to say that there is knowledge which can lead someone to impersonal realization, and there is knowledge which can lead to devotional service? It's like classification of knowledge like that.
Yes, but technically the knowledge that leads to an impersonal consideration is actually avidya. The Sri Upanishad says that those who engage in the worship of demigods enter the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so to those engaged in the worship of the impersonal absolute. So this knowledge which is detached from Krishna, Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, Ratirtam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani, tadvidyadatmanomayam yatapaso yatamaha. Whatever knowledge in this world doesn't connect you to Krishna is actually ignorance. They're like flashes of light in the darkness. They don't actually help us at all. And so the knowledge, so-called knowledge, that comes to this conclusion of that God is impersonal is actually avidya. Yes. Yes, you have a follow-up?
I have one more question, which is not related to this. That what is the difference between sin and offense? Like, how do we differentiate? If we go trace them, what is the root cause of it? Like how Nectar Devotion says that ignorance is the cause of sinful activities. So what is the cause of offenses? And what is the difference between sin and offense?
Well, they can be related, but when we're talking about sin here, the word is really vikarma, is the way it's described in the verse that we looked at. So it's activities that you shouldn't do, and there are various nuances in offenses. I mean, there are offenses that one can commit chanting the holy names, in worshiping the deity, in associating with devotees. These are mentioned in Harinam Chintamani. And there are various kinds of offenses that are there, and reasons for them. For instance, in worshiping the deity, an offense if you become lax and stop performing your duty and not doing the deity worship properly. You become too familiar, you just become lazy, and you don't do it. This becomes a kind of an offense, an aparadha. So the word, you look at it carefully, aparadha. So we hear Radharani, Radha. This is aparadha. It's again, Radha means worship. Radharani means the one who does the topmost worship. And so this aparadha means that somebody's doing something against the worship, the idea of the worship. So It does imply that somebody has some knowledge that they're engaging in the system, but then they do it wrong. And so there's that, and there's vikarma, which means to act against one's nature. Prabhupada describes it like that in another place, against one's interest. There's scriptural injunctions, you should do this and not that. Drive on the right side of the road, but you drive on the left side. So there's going to be bloodshed, and there's going to be some reaction to that, vikarma. So what we say sin really is a word that means vikarma. We're doing something against our interest, our ultimate interest.
But the cause of both the offense and sin is avidya or ignorance.
Well, as I mentioned, in some kind of aparadhas, we might have weakness of heart. This is one thing that Haridas Thakur mentions. Due to weakness of heart, I become attached to petty material things. And for the sake of those, I don't do my devotional service. Or I'm inattentive because I start looking at something else rather than the holy name when I'm chanting. And so this becomes an aparadha. And this is due to, like, defects, anartas within our heart. There are basic anartas, symptoms of anartas. The first one is laya, which is called sleep. what it means sleep, that I become sleepy when I'm doing my chanting, and then I get tired. But if someone called me up and said, you just won the lottery, I'd wake right back up again. And then vishepa, which means that there's distraction. I'm doing the thing, but I'm not really paying attention to it. And then a pratipati means that there's no sleep and there's no distraction, but I'm just not into it. Meh. Forget it. You know, I just want to do it. And then there's rasasvada, which means that there's I have a taste, a natural taste for sense gratification. It's still there in my senses. Like, you know, I look at stuff and I think, oh, I want that. And then there are innate kinds of bad qualities like lust, greed, anger, and things like that, and they come out from time to time. So these are there naturally in the heart of a person who is conditioned by the material nature. These are called the five obstacles to ruchi. Or actually, the real definition is when these five obstacles are removed, then one comes to the point of nishta bhakti, which means steady bhakti, because these are the five obstacles that keep us from being steady. So while one's in anartha nivritti, practicing devotional service, and is being plagued by these things, these may be the causes of aparadhas. There's also a Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in the Madhurya Kadambini, as one begins to perform devotional practice and then becomes well known for it. In other words, the person actually is starting to advance, and then other people might come to that person and start offering all kinds of accolades and gifts and things like that, and that person may be carried away by that. And this is another kind of influence that can cause aparadha. So there's various things, forces that can cause aparadha as we're practicing. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, we have to be very regulated and careful when we're doing that. So they're not exactly the same thing, vikarma and aparadha. Slight, subtle difference. Prabhu, you had a point.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I had a question. In Bhagavad Gita, it says Sankhya Yoga Prathagwala Pravadanti Na Pandita. So Sankhya and Yoga eventually leads to the same result. And Lord Krishna says only Chinese people think that they are different. But Maharaj, so does Sankhya Yoga constitute impersonalism, or does it always have to comprised of the impersonalist philosophy, or is it just analytical in nature? What is it?
No, sometimes it's taught in an atheistic way. And Prabhupada brings this up many, many times in the Bhagavatam, that there's an atheist Kapila who taught Sankhya in such a way to mislead people. And then, of course, we have our Kapila of the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, who teaches Sankhya in order to bring you to pure devotional service. And, you know, there's a way in which you eliminate all the things that aren't relevant, and you see the universe in its various parts. Sankhya means to count everything. You count it and go like, okay, these things aren't important, this is. And you come to that point of understanding what is the soul and the relationship with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yes. Is there a 5-minute Gita class tonight? Nobody's ready, right? Okay, next week.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. I think I needed this badly. One thing which I liked a lot was when you mentioned the police officer talking mm-hmm. about the crime of opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's very, very powerful that, you know, we blame Maya, but we are the ones who, you know, keep our house open for it to step in.
Yeah, you can think about that. You know, you leave your window open. If you leave your car open, you know, leave your computer on the front seat. You might as well just put a sign on the car that says free goods, help self. You know, you're in one sense you're complicit because you tempted somebody to do it, or at least you put yourself in a disadvantageous situation. So yes, it relates to our the way our relationship with Maya. So we have to not put us, not, Maya's opportunistic. So if we don't give an opportunity, then we'll be okay. Prekishori.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the wonderful class. So from the Svapa of the Mula verse, one of my favorite, the beautiful lines that came out of that was, the causeless mercy on a devotee is the supreme opulence of the Lord. And I loved how you used the example of Ajamu, where he had the perfect circumstances to be, you know, advance himself to be a pure devotee, but he left that all to pursue, like, total U-turn into a different life. However, because Krishna has the mercy of a father, as soon as he saw that Ajamu sincerely chanted the holy name, he was free from the clutches of Yamaraj. So I really like that point.
Yeah, it's one of the most edifying sections of the Bhagavatam, story of Ajamil, for devotees. I mean, practically on every page, you're like, really? All that? You know, is it really true? I mean, there's so much there expressing how merciful the holy name is, that even if somebody doesn't know what they're doing when they chant it, that Bhagavatam, just Shukadeva comes right out and says it. Yes, 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 yes. It's that powerful. Krishna's that merciful. And it makes you want to take advantage of the chanting, right? And now, someone from our pundit section quote a verse from the Shirsha Upanishad to verify any of the points that we made tonight. To think about it or call a friend. What else? Yes. 1-2. 1-2.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I like the point you mentioned about anathana vritti. You compared that to taking a stone up the hill, and then on the other side of the hill is just stars freely rolling. Then when one comes to nistha, and then further.
Yeah, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, again from the Madhurya Kadambini, his metaphors are about nectar pouring, and you know that there's clouds and they're pouring nectar, and then it describes that they start to shower down with more intensity. So the more we move along the path of bhakti, and we become, we have greater capacity to take in Krishna's mercy, then the nectar pours more and more as we continue. Yeah.
Maharaj, I was listening to some class, and very interesting point was made regarding, so you talked about Jivan Mukta, and it was mentioned in Chandogya Upanishad there are 8 symptoms of people who are in Jivan Mukta stage. So I just wanted to list them. Apahat Papaha means free from sinful tendencies. Vijaraha, not affected by old age. Vimrityu, they don't have fear of death. And Vishokaha, they are not affected by dualities. Vijagatsaha means they are very disgusted by material engagements. Atipataha meant always engaged in devotional service. Satya Sankalpa, always thinking about the Lord. And Satya Kam, whatever they say comes true.
Mm-hmm. So, become Jivan Mukta. And my point, I was saying that in that context, that anybody who's resigned themselves to following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if that's their full intention, then there's indication that, you know, such a person, well, as an example, if a person surrenders to Krishna and takes initiation means the beginning, so someone's just beginning, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, and this comes in the Madhya Lila, I believe it's Madhya, in the section of Haridas Thakur and Sanatan Goswami talking to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the sores on Sanatan's body. And Mahaprabhu talks about how a person who takes up the process of devotional service no longer has a material body. The body is transformed. And he quotes, or he gives the verse, and we're quoting, Tikshikali Bhaktakari Atma Samarpan. Shekali Bhaktakari Atma Samarpan. No, Krishna. Atmasam, yeah. That the Krishna says this person is equal to me, or, you know, on the same level spiritually because they've surrendered. So he gives that kind of indication. But, and Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in a purport that if someone has full faith that Krishna and his name are non-different, then such a person becomes empowered, is empowered enough to go make Vaishnavas all around the world. So there's a way, even in the preliminary stages of surrender to Krishna and taking to devotional service, as we mentioned also that, and it's said in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that as soon as one takes up the process of pure bhakti, then one becomes free from material distress because distress is caused by karmic reactions, and those reactions are eradicated by Vishnu Bhakti Ritahatmanam. And so then there's this case to be made that even in the preliminary stages, when one surrenders, one becomes a liberated person by dint of following. Of course, there's greater and greater achievement as one moves forward on the path. And that was a really nice citation. Thank you. Have time for one more. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. I like the point you mentioned that all resources are here in the world, but you cannot get them without God's intervention. So if everyone understands that, then, you know, people might not try to take others' resources.
Yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on to give illustrations of that. He said, just like a king, every day he's brought a royal feast. He's king, he deserves it, right? So the royal feast comes, and one day he becomes angry at one of his enemies. He said, oh, I'm not eating. So Mahaprabhu said, that's his destiny. He can't eat that day because he's angry. And next day the royal feast comes, and then he gets sick. He can't eat. So even the king, he should have anything. But he can have it by the circumstances arranged by the Lord. Even if it's supposed to be fully available to you, you can't get it unless it's allotted to you by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's very true that if you think in that way, everything belongs to the Lord, and everything within the universe, animate or inanimate, is controlled by the Lord. That one should accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as one's quota, and one should not accept other things knowing well to whom they belong. Give him a mic. Give us the verse. Okay, you're ready.
Ishvarasya midam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena taktena bhuntita magada kashasitana.
Very good. Okay, give us another one. About knowledge, the difference between knowledge and ignorance.
Oh, I have
the different results.
I had another one about
okay.
The one that you said in the middle of the class. Andam tama pravishanti ye sambhutyam apasate tato bhuya evate tamo yav sambhutyam rataha. And you were mentioning about how those who worship the demigod go to the darkest region of hell. And then I think the second part is like those who worship the impersonal Brahma.
And more still do those worship the impersonal absolute. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, I think all of you are coming down on a bus, right?
Yeah.
Good. One big bus for everybody. Is it one bus?
Yes.
So, I'm leaving early tomorrow morning to go down to Los Angeles because I have a few services to perform tomorrow. And then you're coming on Friday night?
Yes.
So I'll see you for Mangalartik, or at least for greeting of the deities on sometime on Saturday. Shraddha's bringing the shlokas, and so we can chant for Shishi Rukmini Dwarkadish our shlokas. We're going to do this year chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita and all the other things that we can fit in so that you don't miss prasadam down there. And because I have to catch an early flight, I hope you'll excuse me, but I have to head right out before the Artik. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Los Angeles, and also, since I think it's my first day back since I was on a writing retreat, I'm looking forward to seeing you more frequently. I have a lot of thoughts and things to discuss. There's a lot of projects going on, and I'm very eager to talk to everybody about it. So thank you for all that you're doing to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and for taking care of each other and for taking care of yourselves. And I'll see you in a few hours down in Los Angeles. Vanchakalpavrishcha kripasnabhivacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha nantakoti vaishnavinniki jai gopremanande. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.